Before coming to the West, many of you know this history, our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada was given instruction by his spiritual master to take the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the English-speaking parts of the world. And in so doing, it will be both good for you and good for them at the same time. And as you know the history, it's the very first instruction and the final instruction before Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's departure. In a mood of humility, not feeling qualified for such a challenge, a task, nonetheless, Prabhupada prepared himself and he brought the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the Western countries in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the teachings of Lord Chaitanya are the Srimad Bhagavatam, or the Srimad Bhagavatam is the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which is the message of love of God or pure devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada wrote that hearing this message of Srimad Bhagavatam will purify our existence, and to receive its message even more effectively by studying the Sandarbhas of Jiva Goswami, which is what we're doing, at least one of them, the hearing of the Bhagavatam's message will be even more focused and clear. And so the awakening of our dormant Krishna prema, love for Krishna, will be most effective. So with that advice or instruction, we've been going down this path of considering as best we can and presenting as best we can this Tattva Sandarbha. Because in the first of these six Sandarbhas, Tattva Sandarbha, it lays out the groundwork for all the others. Like I said, it's like a seed, and then the seed is magnified and expanded and so forth in the following five Sandarbhas. So we're getting seed-like understandings. And it's been challenging, but it's also nourishing to understand. So what we've been spending our time with this whole weekend is, after having heard that Srimad Bhagavatam is the best means of knowing transcendence or the topics of Krishna, Krishna Tattva, what is that message of Srimad Bhagavatam? In what way does it present the topic or the subject, Krishna? So we've finished two substantial sections. One, the first being the heart of the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadev, and the heart of the compiler or author, Vyasadev. Because what's in the heart is what comes out. So what they presented by speaking and writing is found within their heart. And so in very wonderful ways, the heart of the two have been described, and that's what we've been discussing. The first section. And in summary, in their heart appeared their attractiveness for the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, the pastimes of Krishna, the loving kindness of Krishna, and so forth. And that's what they felt, so that's what they experienced, and so that's what they spoke and wrote. And the means to come to that stage of love was for Krishna was by hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva understood that. That's why he taught it to Shukadev. Shukadev received it, and then he spoke it. And to this day, we still have it, same message. And the second section that we just completed was to understand the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam. One can take the approach of understanding the microcosm, and then in turn one can understand the macrocosm. Or by understanding a drop of water in the ocean, one can understand the makeup of the ocean. Or by understanding the tiny jiva, the living entity, because the living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme, one can understand the Supreme. And as mentioned, that's a standard Sanskrit procedure. Vyasti to Samasti, the tiny to the great. Because the tiny is qualitatively one. So rather than reviewing all of that, that's the topic that we discussed, and now we're concluding by texts 56 through 63. And I'm not going to go into the detail that I did with the other sections, in part because of time and also in part because it's really complicated. So it's just, and it has several parts, but largely it's understanding the message of Srimad Bhagavatam by understanding what its 10 topics are. And the 10 topics are expressed by the speaker, Shukadev Goswami, in the final chapter of Canto 2, Canto 2, Chapter 10, verses 1 and 2. We'll see the verses. He lists out the 10 topics. The next six verses, the next four verses are elaborating on the first nine, saying what they are, what they mean, and then seven and eight are explaining that the tenth topic is not just another one of ten, another one of, you know, nine plus one more, it just happens to be number ten. Rather, it is the shelter of all the others. If you remember that nice diagram, the absolute truth in the center, that kind of cameo, and then expansions of the absolute truth are connected to their source. Remember that graphic. Same idea here. The Sanskrit word is ashraya, which means shelter. So that which is the fountainhead and source of everything else, that's the absolute truth. Whatever that is, that from which everything else comes, this is Vedanta, Vedanta Sutra, it's the first aphorism. The absolute truth, or second, the absolute truth, whatever that is that from which everything else comes. Whatever that is, that's the absolute truth. So the absolute truth is the shelter of all other truths. All other truths are secondary. I meant to get an image. I forgot to do it. An image of a chandelier. So what's a chandelier? It's a nice French word. It's a light fixture that is made of crystal, and it spreads out like this. And it's hanging from one place up in the ceiling. And then there's lights within the chandelier, and those lights reflect or pass through the crystal, and it sparkles, and it's very attractive. All those crystals and the lights that make up the chandelier are dependent upon something supporting it. And without that something that's supporting it, it's just lying on the ground, and it's not as attractive. It looks broken. So we discussed this previously, like in Bhagavad Gita. There's a concluding statement of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. We recited the verse together, 1866, where the question Arjuna is asking in the very beginning, what is my duty given these circumstances? Because a person of high consciousness doesn't just do something impulsively. They do things because it is to be done. That's this feature of the mode of goodness. You don't do something because it's inconvenient, or don't do it because it's not convenient. You do something because it's to be done. Like, you speak the truth and you don't tell lies because you don't tell lies. You speak the truth. It's just to be done. Or you brush your teeth, or, you know, you do things because they're to be done. You take a bath. You know, stay unclean. Things are to be done. So as far as duties in life, persons of elevated consciousness want to know, what am I to do? And then what standard do you apply? Well, there's codes of theistic conduct for a religious person, and then you do those things whether it's convenient or not. You do because they're to be done. So Arjuna wants to know, what's my duty? This is a very perplexing situation. As far as my intuition is concerned, here's what I shouldn't do and here's what I should do, but I really don't know that this is what I should do and not do. So he turns to Krishna and says, what's my duty in this circumstance? And so many, many, many things are said about duty or dharma, and the concluding statement is the chandelier statement. All these other duties down here, they're subordinate to one duty. Everything that we do is subordinate to one higher purpose, and one higher purpose is to take shelter of ashraya, the place of shelter, to take shelter of the personality of God, of the source of everything. And all other duties are subordinate to that one duty. That's the chandelier image for this visual person, myself. So Bhagavatam similarly has a chandelier message that's in this section that's coming up. We're describing the 10 topics, and one is the shelter of the other 9. It's not just another one. It is the shelter of everything else. Every other subject matter, every other truth is a secondary truth dependent upon this one primary truth or principal truth or absolute truth. And all those other truths are to help us understand the absolute truth. They're aspects of the absolute truth and connected to the absolute truth. Very similar to that graphic with the absolute truth in the middle, and in this world in which we live, there are other things. And those other things are connected to the absolute truth. There's other truths, other realities. And they are to be connected and seen and acted upon in devotion with that connection. That was the previous section. So now this section, the 10 topics. There's different parts to it. Towards the beginning, the second of 12 cantos, Shukadeva presents these 10 topics. Later, we'll see, this is like, you know, a little summary of this final section. Sutta, who heard from Shukadeva and spoke it, he lists the 10 topics. The language is slightly different, but the 10 topics are the same 10 topics. So Jiva Goswami takes us through and does the same thing again, saying number 10 is the shelter of the first 9. And then there's another very interesting thing. It's too complicated for us. At least I don't want to go through the complication of explaining something that's a classic part of Vedic text. It has to do with creation. And there's different aspects. There's the living entity. There's matter. And there's the controllers of matter, the demigods. So the Sanskrit terms are Adi Atmik, is the soul, the jiva, Adi Bhautik, the body, and Adi Daivik, the controllers of material nature, the controllers of the senses, those that give power to the senses. I think Prabhupada would sometimes say, you can't even blink your eyelid without the sanction of some demigod. You can't digest your food. You can't walk across the room. You can't do anything without the senses becoming empowered. We discussed this in the morning session. So those are three elements that go into what we see in front of us, the material world, the visible, physical, material world. It takes the soul that you can't see to animate it. It takes the body to move about and do things, the senses. And then it takes the empowerers of the senses, the demigods or daiva force. And all three of them, just as quick summary, they're one alone without the other two, or even two without one of them, cannot function. They're interdependent. So in one sense, each one of them is the shelter of the other two. It's very detailed. The short of it is, however, all three of them are dependent upon the shelter of all shelters. Ashraya, Shraya. He's the shelter of shelters. And that's the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is drawing the conscious awareness of the living entity to the shelter of all shelters, while describing these other shelters, or describing the cosmic manifestation, while describing the consciousness of the living entity, or describing anything. There is the shelter of all of them. And that the Bhagavatam wants to draw our attention there. And appreciating more and more about that ashraya, the desire to be connected to the linking process of bhakti yoga, the yoga of loving service to the Supreme, and the mature stage of that is love for the Supreme. So that's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the final section. Quick summary. Okay, so now we're going to go into the details, starting with so 56 through 63. We're almost there. The section is being called Discovering the Supreme by Studying the Created Universe. This is the Samasti. The previous section was Vyasti, the micro to understand the macro. This is now looking at the macro, looking at the universe, the created universe. And there's the shelter of the created universe and all the elements within it. So, Jiva Goswami begins by saying, Krishna's very merciful. He's very kind. And he reveals himself through Srimad Bhagavatam. And although he makes himself available and accessible through that Srimad Bhagavatam, we still have problems. Because our intelligence has been darkened by ignorance for many lifetimes. We need some help to get out of that bewilderment. And so, Jiva Goswami says, the Bhagavatam teaches us two very gradual ways of coming to that understanding. By the way, this is a deity of Govindaji in Jaipur, the deity of Rupa Goswami. One of them is the microcosm, which we just finished, 50 through 55, where we were looking at the the nature of the living entity, our own spiritual nature. What is it? Revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam, from a transcendental perspective, the nature of the living entity was identified. And then Tattva, or the supreme reality, can be understood because the living entity is part and parcel of that supreme reality or Vastu Tattva. Then there's a second part which we're now going to enter, and that's the opposite, or looking at the totality of existence, or the created region, because there's beyond the created region, and in addition to the entire creation, the shelter of the entire creation. And to help us with that subject matter, Srimad Bhagavatam is laid out in 10 topics, one of them being the shelter, and the other, the first 9, that have their connection, vastava, vastu, the connection of all things with. This is the list of 10. I'm not going to read it. We're going to go through them one by one quickly. And then over on this side, it says that these 10 topics, especially the final one, the ashraya, they're described in different ways, sometimes by inference, sometimes directly explained, sometimes summary explanations by great sages, sometimes by prayers, sometimes this. But this, the ashraya, or the vastu, the absolute truth, is at the center of them all. And so I'm purposely going quickly, because they're covering a lot of territory. Just hitting highlights. Each one of the 10 topics, especially expressed by Jiva Goswami, is when Vyasadeva compiled all the Vedas, we discussed this morning. First, there was just sound before creation. There was spiritual sound vibration. The Vedas were existing that way. Creation was manifest, and within that creation, the sound was manifest for those who had receivers for that spiritual sound, rishis. They received it, they vibrated it, and it was present that way through sound vibration. Through the passage of the ages of mankind, qualities of human species diminished, including the quality of remembrance. It is said that in previous ages, one could hear something just once, understand it perfectly, remember it perfectly for the rest of your life. That's not the way it is today. Imagine going to school like that. You wouldn't need books. You just need good teachers and good receivers and understand everything and remember it perfectly. But in Kali Yuga, that quality diminishes, so Vyasa wrote the Vedas. And when he wrote the Vedas, he did it in different divisions, and one of those divisions was the history division. And in the history division, there's Mahapuranas, Puranas, and Upapuranas. Mahapuranas, by definition, they have 10 topics. Regular Puranas, they have 5 topics. Upapuranas have less than 5. Jiva Goswami says the other Puranas, they don't make the connection with topic number 10, the ashraya, as clear and lucid as does Srimad Bhagavatam, and therefore one of the parts of this section is it's the best of the Mahapuranas. But Mahapuranas, by definition, there's 10 topics. So I'm just going to spend a little bit of time sharing what Jiva Goswami shares, that each of the 9 topics connect with topic 10, the ashraya. So the Sanskrit term for the first one is sarga. which means the primary or the preliminary creation. It's what Mahavishnu does to bring about the manifest state of universes. So obviously, Vishnu is involved in the primary creation. And then with the secondary creation, or Visarga, that's what Brahma does. Brahma takes all the elements, the plan, the creative impetus, Srishti Shakti. In your market set, go. He puts all the universe together. He's the chief engineer of the universe. So what Brahma does is Visarga, and everything he does, he gets from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. As well as the Gayatri mantra that here it shows he's receiving from Krishna directly. So, Ashraya, or the supreme truth, is connected in topic number 2. And topic number 3 is maintenance. Well, the Supreme Lord maintains the universe that he creates, so he's involved. A little detail. There was a period of European history. I learned this from Sariputta. During a certain period of European history, particularly in Switzerland and Germany, there was a fascination with clocks. You know, watchmakers and clockmakers. So, along with that fascination with clocks, or machines that can help you tell time, a theological idea evolved that differentiated. Some people said, God not only creates the universe, but he stays involved with the universe, moment to moment. And others said, no, he's like a watchmaker. He makes the watch, sells the watch, and has nothing to do with it after it's made. He may have to repair it if it's broken. But God just creates. He's not continually involved. That was a theology. I forget which is which. There's a theology and theology or something like that. Anyway, the Vedas are very clear. As the feature of Paramatma, he's within the heart of every living entity. He's within the heart of every atom. He's fully aware of everything within creation and oversees material nature. Maya Jakshena Prakriti. For both the moving and the non-moving entities within creation, he's involved. So note, it's Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Shiradakshay Vishnu. He's involved in these first three. Creation, sub-creation, and the maintenance of the creation. Then, a fourth topic in Srimad Bhagavatam is poshana, or protection, where the Supreme Lord not only oversees and maintains the place, but he is benevolent, he's loving, and gives his special mercy and protection, especially to his devotees, but to others also who are even against him. He supplies all their necessities, the air and water and light and everything that's needed. He's very caring and kind, so directly involved. Then the next topic number 5, is Uti. Uti. Uti means desires. The living entities have desire. And their desire specifically is apart from the Lord. In material world, it's apart from the Lord, separate from the Lord. So to fulfill their desires, they depend upon the Supreme Lord to fulfill their desires. Otherwise, they can desire all they like. I want to be a millionaire, or whatever it is. I want a red sports car, or whatever it is. The fulfillment of desires ultimately is dependent upon the controller of matter. So he's directly involved in this one. Then another topic is manvantara. According to the Vedic picture of time, There's smaller circles, medium circles, and big circles, and gigantic circles of time, but time moves in cycles. And amongst the various cycles, there's a day of Brahma, and within each day of Brahma, there's 14 Manus, and the Manus are givers of law for the human society, so they can properly conduct themselves with the human form of life for the higher purpose, and also then respect nature and other living entities, give protection and safety, well-being to all other living entities, because human beings within the earthly planet, at least, are especially important, powerful. If they mess up, then other living entities suffer, and they do things properly, other living entities benefit. So there's lawgivers of mankind, that's Manu. And there's Manu has his descendants, so this is the Manvantara topic, the reign of the Manus. And Manus are empowered incarnations. It's one of the six categories of avatars of Vishnu, is the Manus. So he's directly involved, Vishnu is directly involved in this category, the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Ishanukatha, this is Shukadev Goswami speaking the Bhagavatam to Maharaj Pariksit. There's Narada Muni. There's Vyasadeva and other great sages in the assembly. So the speaking of topics of the Lord's pastimes, obviously he's involved. Ashraya, or the Absolute Truth, is involved. Then another topic in the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam is annihilation. There's the total annihilation, and there's periodic partial annihilations that are ascribed. And the power to do that is not somebody that can push an atomic weapon button, and blow up, you know, as Prabhupada said, they can make a big hole in the planet, but they can't blow up the planet. That's the power of Lord Vishnu. And then topic number 9 is mukti, or liberation. So for liberation to take place, there's the giver of liberation, mukti pada, the Supreme Lord. And then finally, the 10th topic, the ultimate shelter of everyone and everything. And that ultimate shelter of everyone and everything is, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, is Krishna. Now Krishna has his intimate activities, his loving pastimes in Vrindavan, that from time to time, each day of Brahma, he manifests, and they're very, very wonderful pastimes of Krishna. And then he goes to Mathura, and then he goes to Dwaraka, and he forms wonderful pastimes with his loving devotees. So he is that ashraya. So now to say the same thing again, the first 9 cantos are helping us to understand the 10th canto. They're not just, you know, it's not canto by canto, there's 9 topics. That's not how it's structured. But it helps us understand the nature of the Supreme. And then the 10th canto is the topics of the Supreme. There's many other topics in these 9, and none of them are superfluous or disconnected with the Supreme. There may be secondary truths connected with the primary truth. That's what we hear from Tattva Sandarbha. Then Gopi Pranadana's commentary. Even though the conditioned souls have a childlike fascination with their own limited world, the Lord kindly reveals himself in the Puranas through accounts of the history of the universe. And for the most fortunate persons, the Bhagavad Purana vividly reveals the full glory of the Supreme. moving right along, because we have to move along because there's eight texts. So that was text 56. In text 57, the speaker, Sukadeva Goswami, is going to give some definition of the first, the purpose of the first nine topics is to help us understand topic number 10. So verses 3, 4, 5, and 6, the nine topics are described. Again, same point as I said in summary at the beginning. The other Mahapuranas that have 10 topics, they also cover these topics. But the speciality of this Srimad Bhagavatam is it very clearly, lucidly shelter of those topics. The 10th topic, the personality of Godhead. So I'm not going to go through that section, the elucidation of the nine topics. I just want to touch on one of them. It's number 9, Mukti. I found it very interesting. Mukti refers to the soul's giving up all other identifications. We spent lots of time discussing restrictions that aren't really who we are, but we accept these restrictions as to be us, the body and the mind, the subtle body and the gross body. It's not who we are. And we often think that's who we are. So mukti means releasing or relinquishing those false identifications and so leaving behind false ego, becoming situated in true identity. That's this ninth topic. And then Jiva Goswami explains very nicely that there's something even beyond that. More important than that is becoming again situated in our natural, rightful, loving relationship with the source of everything, with the absolute truth, with the Supreme Person. That's this 10th topic. And so that leads into text 58. This last topic, or the 10th topic, is the shelter of everyone and everything. Just as the Bhagavatam has these nine topics that lead into the 10th, Jiva Goswami says, the Sandarbhas that he's composing to explain the Srimad Bhagavatam does the same. All of the message of the entire Sandarbhas is to lead us to this shelter of, the shelter of everything. Krishna, the Ashraya. So this is, the text number 7. So we covered 1 and 2, that's the 10 topics. 3, 4, 5, and 6 is explaining the 9. And now number 7, here is the word Ashraya. And highlighted here is the word iti. When it's put together with paramatmeti, it becomes paramameti. Anyway, this word iti is highlighted for a very particular reason. Those of you that were with us earlier, you remember, because we recited it multiple times. 1 to 11. Vedanta tat tattva vidas tattvam yaj jnanam advayam, the non-dual consciousness that makes up the absolute truth, brahmeti, paramatmeti, bhagavan iti shabyate. What Jiva Goswami is going to say is, well, we see Brahma and we see Paramatma, we don't see, where's, what happened to Bhagavan? And he's saying this word here implies it. I'm getting ahead of myself, but I just want to say it ahead of time anyways. So, the translation is, the Supreme One, This is this 10th topic. The Supreme One, who is celebrated as the Supreme Being or the Supreme Soul, is the source, supreme source of the entire cosmic manifestation, as well as its reservoir and winding up. So creation, maintenance, and dissolution. That's him. Thus, he is the supreme fountainhead, the absolute truth. Source of everything, the maintainer of everything, and everything is wound up back within him at the time of cosmic annihilation. So that's the absolute truth. Sa Ashraya. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, explains the creation itself doesn't satisfy any of the Supreme Lord's own desires other than those souls that are rebellious, giving them a chance to become reformed. That's all. And on the contrary, with all the different features of material creation, it's just reflecting some living entity's desire. I had this very nice realization. I'll share it with you. Many years ago, I can't even remember how long ago, 1970-something or other, 74, 75, My main service was distributing books, and a situation happened where the Puerto Rico airport said, come on over and distribute books. So I didn't speak Spanish, but I was requested, would you like to go to Puerto Rico and distribute books? Sure. So I went to Puerto Rico to distribute books. And one of the things we found was that in New York, there's all these posters. Go to Puerto Rico, and you'll have a nice time. And all the posters in Puerto Rico, so go to New York, and you'll have a nice time. The grass is greener on the other side of the fence. And then another thing we saw was there are times, seasonally, the airport would be busier and the airport would be slower. So we got creative and said, why don't we go visit some of the other islands and distribute books in this one and that one and the other one. So they didn't have these big planes. They had these pontoon planes. Pontoon planes? You know, like you ride on the water and zoom, zoom, and you take off from the water. They have them in Alaska, too. And then you land in the water by the next island. So we're flying over a bunch of islands. You look out the window, and there's one that's a sugarcane island. And over there is a military base island. And over there is a resort island. And I was thinking, this is just somebody's desire. It's just an island. But, you know, this is an opportunity to make some money. This is an opportunity to make war. This is an opportunity to entertain people and make money. So the feature that the world around us takes is just a manifestation of somebody's desire or a group of somebody's desire, whether it's the capitalist or the laborist or the government people or whoever it is. The shape of the world around us is just simply a manifestation of some living entity's desire. And then there's a supreme who's reciprocating with that desire and giving the intelligence and the ingredients and the ability and etc. So we're dependent upon someone to fulfill desires. And the purpose of creation is not God wants us to suffer or something like that. He wants us to be rectified. But if we say no, it's like a child. There's some children I've met, their favorite word is no. Whatever it is, no. So those who say no to the loving request of the loving Supreme Father, this material world is there for them. And so then concession is made for the fulfillment of their desire, but the purpose behind it actually is rectification of that rebelliousness, to restore the loving nature of the soul, to say yes instead of no. So now here's that verse we just recited, and there's the word iti, and here's the translation saying this advaya jnana, that the non-dual consciousness is the primary symptom of the absolute truth, which has its different features. Brahman Paramatma Bhagavan. This is Vedic text. And Jiva Goswami explains this word iti, that's here, that was in the one that we showed a little bit earlier. It carries the sense of features. So the feature of Paramatma, the feature of Brahman, the feature of Bhagavan. And so, while it wasn't specified in text 7, it's implied. It's a detail. It's nice. It's important. So now, there's the source of all manifestations. There's the creation and the annihilation. And that which is the cause of the creation, the source of the creation, the place where it goes back to at the time of annihilation, the maintenance, that's the fountainhead, that's the absolute truth. And the absolute truth is known by these different names or different features. Brahman, that's on the left, and Paramatma, that's on the right. And Bhagavan is in the middle. These are features of the absolute truth. So now stepping back to like the header of this little subsection, we want to understand the Supreme. So one of the ways to understand the Supreme is by understanding that which comes from the Supreme, the samasti, the big picture of the absolute truth in terms of creation. And what the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam do for us is say all these different features of creation have their rest or shelter in the Supreme. So, yeah, let's go forward. But we're conditioned. We're conditioned into small thinking, not big thinking. And we're conditioned by the modes of nature. So it's hard for us to appreciate the fullness of the Supreme. And therefore, Jiva Goswami explains, for some people, it's easier to think of the Supreme in terms of the impersonal aspect. However, a more advanced stage in the spiritual trajectory is those that engage in the process of meditation upon the not just the all-pervasiveness of the Supreme, but the localized aspect of the Supreme within the heart. And then yet that Paramatma feature, when the form of Paramatma, pictured here, very nice painting, depicted based upon the realization of qualified yogis, while there's features of that form and there's qualities carried within the Lord of the heart, it doesn't display the fullness of loving exchanges. And so one can, we heard this before, but one can progress further and desire to be engaged in loving service unto that Supreme. And that way a more intimate relation rather than just viewing there's me and there's the Supreme and I'm viewing him, but interacting in a loving manner in the form of loving service. And so this is summarizing now Kapila's teachings in Canto 3, but a more advanced stage then from the process of mystic yoga is directly engaging in loving service to the personal feature of the Supreme, this Bhagavan feature of the Supreme. So that was 56, 57, 58. And now we just have a few more to go. These are summary, obviously. Oh, nice painting, huh? So texts 59 and 60 take the subject into a slightly different direction. But it's still connected to creation, and I mentioned it already. There are these features within creation of the living entity, that's the Atma or Adhyatmika. There's bodies, Adibhautika, and there's the controllers or empowerers of the sense help describe the features of creation, but they all have their shelter in the Supreme. So what do these terms mean? Here's what the terms mean. Adhyatmika, that's the living entity, the jiva, the seer, who in illusion thinks himself as the owner of the senses. And then there's Adibhautika, that's the gross body. Here's from the Adibhautika person consists of food and vital fluid, in other words, the gross body. So there's the soul, there's the gross body, and then there's the senses, and the controllers of the senses, that's the demigods. So if you want to have a creation, you got to have these three. Want to be Lord Brahma someday? You got to know about these three. You can't have a creation otherwise. You got to have controllers of the senses, empowerers of the senses. The short message is, they're interdependent. One without the other is inadequate. Two without the other one is inadequate. You have to have all three, and they're interdependent. And in that sense, one of them can be said to be the shelter of the other two. To whatever degree you can put forward the argument that one is the shelter of the other two, then there's the shelter of that shelter. Ashraya, Shraya. So who is that Ashraya, Shraya? That's Krishna. This is a nice photograph of Radha Govinda. I like Radha Govinda. So that's the subject of this section, 59 and 60. Again, there's the creation that has these three parts. Each of the three parts are interdependent. One alone or two alone cannot make creation happen. You need all three. None of them are sufficient unto themselves. They're all dependent upon the ultimate ashraya or the ashraya of other ashrayas, the cause of all causes, the shelter of all shelters. That's the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And now we're ready for the final three. And we're done. So in this final section, 61 through 63, there's again a list of the 10 topics found in the last chapter, second to the last chapter of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12. Sutta Goswami gives his list of the 10 topics. The nomenclature is slightly different. The message is the same, like synonyms, more or less. Then another subject matter in this section is alone the shelter. This is specific for creation, the material manifestation. And the final section is, of all those literatures that have 10 topics, Srimad Bhagavatam is the superlative. It's the shelter of those other ones. Because there's Mahapuranas besides Srimad. He goes through step by step in his own special way to indicate that. And even the others, the other Puranas say the same thing. This is the emperor. We may be kings, that one's the emperor amongst kings. It's the best amongst all of us, the other Puranas say. Jiva Goswami wanted to discuss Krishna. He said, before we speak about Krishna, we should try to understand the best means of knowing about Krishna. What is that best means? Best means is Srimad Bhagavatam. Then, what does Srimad Bhagavatam say about Krishna? What is that elucidation of the subject matter? Then in these three divisions, the realizations of Shuka and Vyas, understand the Supreme, and then this final, the 10 topics. And that tells us what the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam is. And although there's many, many topics, the ashraya of all the topics is Krishna. So all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, the deliverer of the fallen. All glories to Krishnachandra. These are his final words. We say all glories to Jiva Goswami, who churned and distributed this nectar through his Sandarbhas, and all glories to our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada, who gave us Bhagavatam and encouraged us to take shelter of its message. Hare Krishna. Gaur Bhaktivrinda ki jai. So, any questions or comments before we wrap up?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much. Maharaj, I was contemplating what is the practical application of all these 3-4 days we gone through this seminar. So what is the practical applications in my...
What's the take-home message? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, Prabhupada.
Yeah? Well, I thought I did that this morning. I was trying to do that this morning. We're being given a process, not just information, not just something to contemplate, but we're given a process to move along the path, an authorized process, a very, very ancient traditional process to reawaken our dormant, the fullness of our dormant spiritual consciousness, primarily through sound vibration, coming to us in this descending fashion. From Krishna directly to Brahma, from Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyasa, and so on, through that descending process. And with the very kind assistance of Jiva Goswami helping us to have maximum clarity on what the relationship of all things. So it's information, but it's to contemplate and to enter into the mood of loving service. It's to guide our lives. How to live your life day to day, moment to moment, in such a manner that the maximum potential of consciousness can be experienced by you. It's not just information. It's a lot of information, but it's not just information. It's an awakening, is a process to awaken, as Vyasadeva did, as Shukadeva did, so ourselves. Awaken, seeing and entering into loving pastimes, a loving service with Krishna, through sound vibration, properly heard. That's the take home. So, continue to hear to whatever degree that hearing processes help to elevate consciousness. Continue to hear, and the elevation of consciousness, the awakening of our dormant love for Krishna will take place. It's not a matter of belief, it's a matter of awakening of consciousness, just by sound. I'll say one other thing in relation to your question, or response to your question. You know who is Haridas Thakur?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yeah. So he's our acharya, or the example center for the chanting of the holy name. Haridas Thakur says, our primary process is the Maha Mantra, chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But we won't have the full effect that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra can give us without having proper sambandha gyan, proper knowledge of all things relationship with the Supreme. Benefit will be there, but the full benefit of awakening love of God will not take place. So this is to help us have proper sambandha gyan, so we can get the full benefit of any beneficial process, including the chanting of the holy name. And then we can take up the process of serving the Supreme with more enthusiasm and more clarity and reach the goal. Love for Krishna. That's the take home. Something else?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Yeah.
Maharaj, how to understand that the nature of Ashraya is Jiva, body, and controller of senses?
How to understand Ashraya is the place of shelter for those three? That's your question? The Atma?
In one of the slides, it says nature of Ashraya is Jiva, body, and controller of senses? In one of the slides.
Okay, the last part of your sentence, which is critical, I didn't catch. It says the ashraya is, say it one more time, slowly.
It has three parts, jiva, body, and the controller of senses.
Yeah, so that's adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibhautika. So I'll say it again, those are aspects of creation. If you want to be a creator, if you want to create a universe, you have to have those three things. You have to have living entities, you have to have bodies, you have to have the controllers of the senses. Those are three parts that make up the creation. Each of those three parts are dependent upon the ashraya. They're not, the ashraya is the shelter of them. That's what ashraya means, shelter. So, jivas don't come into being. Bodies come into being and go out of being. Demigods similarly come into being and go out of being. And so, it's one of the, you know, elaborate topics discussed in this section. Between the three of them, one of them is eternal, and the other two are temporary. So, that one that's eternal can be said to be the ashraya of the other two. Because without the one that's eternal, the other two have no meaning. But the living entity and the other two derive their existence from the shelter of them. Now, does that address your question or no?
Yes. So, how about the rest of material world? Like other matter?
Well, it's just, you know, it's recyclable. In other words, you know, here's a chair. Before it was a chair, it was a tree. Before it was a tree, it was the earth. Before the earth, who knows, maybe it was a body. And then when, you know, going that way in time, you know, the chair is going to be finished and sometime it goes back to the earth. And then somebody's going to grow a potato and then they're going to eat the potato and then develop their body. It's recyclable. Prakriti. You could say bhautik is, you know, it's the physical elements that mentioned from the Taittiriya Upanishad is fluids and other substances, you know, that make up bodies. So it's the prakriti, material nature. But specific for functioning, then it comes together in a certain configuration called the body, whether it's human body or, you know, worm body or a insect body or some whatever other species. But if you're going to have activity, then you need a body. And the elements come from material nature. And there's a controller of material nature.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, it looks like we're done. Yay! Thank you all for sticking it through to the end.